Now recording.
Red came in way too much heat there. Very loud.
Very loud, yeah. Me too.
Yeah, didn't realize it was that loud. Welcome back to another episode of the Hoops Temple podcast. Y'all know me, Nathan Schwartz. Join me from New Zealand, Dylan Williamson, and hopefully popping on at some point will be Aaron Schroeder, although his absence is both concerning and, I don't know, first night of Hanukkah, though.
There aren't a lot of Hanukkah celebrators where I'm from. Is there alcohol involved in Hanukkah celebrations?
I mean, it's not as much of a part of the celebration as it is for Passover, where you are mandated to drink 4 glasses of wine.
All right.
Yeah. Go buy yourself a nice bottle of Manischewitz if you really want to celebrate and get down. Well, no, the Jewish way, it's not great wine, but have you ever had Concord grape juice? It's basically the same thing, but with alcohol.
All right.
Well, we got a couple of things to discuss today. We've got trades, as the NBA trade deadline has officially began. The trade season has begun. And we've had another few fun things happen around the league, like my Lakers season just completely ending. But maybe we'll hang out and stick that in the back half.
Maybe the Lakers could use Joe Mazzulla's scouting report to improve their defense.
Yes, let's all get on Quizlet. Let's take his scouting report. Let's see how we could do. But
It is sort of a magical time of year, you know. Everyone's, you know, there's that certain day in December that everyone looks forward to, December 15, which is now past. It's a holiday among NBA fans, which means 90% of the league is now eligible to be traded.
You know who's not eligible to be traded?
Players that signed extensions using bird rights?
Players who signed extension using bird rights, including LeBron James, who with Anthony Davis now injured, I've spent...
Oh, no.
spent part of the afternoon trying to figure out, okay, let's just blow it up. Let's end this. And we can't trade him till Valentine's Day, February 14th. So the misery continues.
So it's gonna be a big summer. You'll have cap space. You can go sign Kyrie or Draymond Green or whatever.
Hey, if I see one more Lakers interested in Miles Bridges post, I'm gonna be it's gonna be a stressful thing. But we thought what might be fun was try to come up with a mock trade for every Eastern Conference team. I was unsuccessful. There are not good mock trades for all of these teams. And I think we can get into why. Dylan, you had some struggles too doing this, right?
Yeah, I think it might be a quiet deadline this year. It's this weird sort of combination of, you know, well, the initial goal is to try to find a trade for every team. But like you start at the top and it's like, what the hell are the Celtics trying to gain and what do they have to give up? You know, it's like, are they going to just trade Gallinari for like a backup forward? You know, that doesn't make for exciting podcasting or exciting trades. And then the other thing is a real lack of sellers, especially if you're looking in the West. You know, I don't know if it's statistically verifiable, but for sure it seems that interconference trades seem to be more likely, as in you don't want to trade with teams in your own conference. And so, like, if you're looking at how many teams in the West are sellers, it's like maybe Houston and San Antonio, and like that might be it. And there are like how many, like 3 good players that could help a veteran team on that roster. Even in the East, there are maybe like Orlando, Detroit, Charlotte, who have given up on the year. You know, Washington is really far back, but they do still theoretically want to win games, but they could become a seller, same as Chicago, same as Toronto, maybe Indiana, although they're probably too good at this point. But yeah, there's like the teams at the top have such limited resources and really quite complete rosters as well. There are so few teams that are actually out of it that would be willing to just sell off good players.
You want to run through our Eastern Conference mock trades, whoever you got?
Do you want to go in order standings?
Sure.
All right. What did you have for the Bucks? Because the Bucks are kind of difficult in that they've got, I mean, their rotation is pretty set, and especially with Joe Ingles coming back, I don't know that they have any major holes in their rotation. And then you sort of combine that with a lack of assets. So what did you identify as a need for the Bucks, and could you come up with any fits?
Yeah, so as far as needs go, it's kind of hard because they kind of have two different needs. They need wing depth. They have like the or they actually don't have Dante DiVincenzo anymore, but they have the DiVincenzo-esque players in Grayson Allen and Pat Connaughton. They don't really have a true point guard, but they don't. You know, you saw it when Middleton was out. They really lack a wing stopper and anyone that can kind of create off the dribble other than Giannis and Middleton. I mean, Drew does some, but I feel like I either want to see them upgrade like a backup point guard and have a true backup point guard, or get another wing that can catch and shoot or do a little bit of playmaking and drive hard, and someone that's not 6'4".
Yeah, I mean, they do have a few tradable contracts, or at least like ways to make up salary, you know, like Grayson Allen, $8.5 million, George Hill is $4 million of expiring. It's like they do have some ways to throw salary together.
They also have a lot of second round picks. They've got either Cleveland or Golden State's pick this year. They've got Portland's pick next year. You know, I mean, seconds aren't everything, but I was kind of looking around. I was looking at the Thunder, who have Darius Bazley, who's just completely fallen out of their rotation. They are just not interested in playing him. They've got all of their young assets. Could you flip George Hill in maybe 1 or 2 seconds and bring back Bazley? I feel like that could add some scoring punch to the bench and not give up anything.
Yeah, or another guy on the Thunder that, I mean, you've got to think that almost every team in the league would be calling in on. Kendrick Williams, however you say it, is like quietly like a really solid NBA player. Like he can pass a little, he can defend a little, he can kind of shoot. You know, it's just like he's a good basketball player. And he's really cheap, so that is maybe almost a difficulty that you've got to find value to trade on a low contract. But I don't know, what do you think, like Marjon Beauchamp has any sort of trade value? Or maybe it is just a combination of those seconds.
I really like Beauchamp. I feel like Beauchamp could be something in a few years. I don't know if he ever hits even like Otto Porter range, which is another option for them to try to go get Otto Porter. But he's got good defensive instincts. He's very young, coming off of the G League. I think I wouldn't move him just for movement's sake. Like I would move him if I thought that this guy could help me win another chip.
Mm.
Did you have a trade for the Bucks?
No, but there's sort of a lack of players that I guess are slightly overpaid but still reasonable contributors. You know, like like I was saying, the Bucks could put together like $12 million worth of salary, but there's sort of a dearth of like $12 million players who are valuable contributors but not totally worth that $12 million, so that, you know, you're sort of taking on bad money. So yeah, it was really hard to find anything for them.
Another one that I looked at was Thad Young, who's been playing really well for Toronto. I just think if the Raptors go for the blow it up, Thad's inside-out presence could be a really nice piece next to Giannis. I mean, he kind of does the exact same thing as Bobby Portis, but slightly higher help defense.
Yeah, bit of defender, less good offensively.
Less crazy of eyes.
Yeah, yeah. The other two guys that I thought about for them, but it was kind of difficult to create enough value for the team they're trading with, is like, if they could get either Bogdanovich, I think that both of those guys would really help them. You know, they rectify that terrible botch of trying to sign Bogdanovich and finally bring him in. He's been, you know, kind of, I mean, he's missed time, but he seems like a strange fit with the current Hawks team. Sort of everyone's a strange fit on that team at the moment. They don't fit together well at all.
Yeah.
They're sitting around 500 at the moment.
I guess he's only at 18 mil, so that is a conceivable contract to get. You might have to give up Bobby Portis to get there.
Yeah, like Bobby Portis and Grayson Allen would get you there. Bobby Portis could be decent for Atlanta. Grayson Allen to just give them a shooter could be useful. But yeah, it's tricky to find value.
Yeah, I don't think either team does it just from the Bucks not wanting to give up that much depth. I mean, they don't have a ton of depth within their roster. Portis is also one of the players that still cannot be traded, apparently until January 15th.
Ah, he got an extension, I guess.
Yep. Well, what about for Boston? Are they still second in the standings?
They are, yep.
Yeah, I figured after they lost to Golden State, to the Clippers, to the Magic, they're just in free fall. I mean, the only team they could beat right now is the Lakers.
Which isn't saying a whole lot, come on.
No, it hurts. The joke hurts me as much as it hurts them. So I'm okay with it. Actually, Boston's in first at this current second. So good job, us, following the standings.
Boston do have a couple first-round picks that they could move if there's a move that's worth doing. Did any of your trade hypotheses include the moving of a first-round pick?
No, absolutely not. I had them basically getting Nerlens Noel for Danilo Gallinari in some seconds. He's not really playing a lot for the Pistons, but I watched Blake Griffin play way too many minutes. Luke Kornet, if I have to see one more segment on the Eclipse, his jumping, no, I'm just done. Let's get another big. Let's get someone who can protect the rim. Yeah, I think he'd be a really nice fit for 10 minutes a night. Now, with Robert Williams back, maybe you just don't need this anymore, but hey, it's Danilo. The Pistons get some cap savings, and a second round pick. So I think both sides would be ultimately okay with this if it's not really going to move the needle much.
I like Nolan so well. I think he's is like a really good rim protector and has become a pretty solid defensive player. Obviously injuries are a concern for him. And I mean you talk about Rob Williams being back and maybe they don't necessarily need another five, but you probably don't want to play Rob massive minutes coming back from injury, and ideally you'd like him pretty fresh going into playoffs. Horford, who's their other option at the five, has had to play probably way more than what he should be. And so you can, sort of reduce minutes from him as well by having a second or third string center in there. And yeah, it does give them some nice rim protection.
Horford, though, still looks nice.
He does. I'm just worried about how old he is and, whether he should be playing as many minutes as he's playing.
Yeah, probably not. You want to be able to ramp him up to 40 minutes in the playoffs, but it'd be nice if he could play like 26 right now. Did you have any, or no, you didn't have any trades for the Celtics, did you?
No, it's pretty difficult. The only real trade piece is Bogdanovic. Sorry, not Bogdanovic. Is Gallinari. Trying to find a contributor at $6 million is pretty difficult. Like maybe you send him back to Atlanta and get, I don't know, Justin Holiday or someone and hope that he shoots better for you. But they're in pretty good shape too. Yeah, they're probably the championship favorite at the moment. So I don't think they need to be making any massive swings. It is interesting though that they do have multiple first round picks that they can move if something worthy does come up.
Well, then on to the Cleveland Cavaliers, who desperately need, well, I mean, not desperately, but if they could get a three to round out their rotation, someone who could play some defense would be really nice. Did you have anything lined up for Cleveland?
Right along those lines of trying to find a guy that can shoot and defend a little bit. And it's really hard to find, with limited assets, those guys are the most valuable players in the league, guys that can shoot and defend on the wing. So the guy that I came up with was Eric Gordon from the Rockets. He's kind of undersized for a small forward, but he is really strong. He, can get over a screen, enables you to switch a little bit, and that would be basically just sending Caris LeVert back to the Rockets. Maybe Isaac Okoro's in there to provide some value, and you take on, I don't know, Derek Favors or someone. Jayshon Tate would be nice for them as well if they could get him, but he's not eligible to be traded right now. But yeah, that was sort of my thought on how they could find someone that can shoot and defend with such limited resources.
Man, that would be real small. Eric Gordon, only 6'3".
Yeah. Is that
Like,
how tall he is? That's crazy that he starts at the three.
yeah, they are a small, small team. I was watching them play the Heat, who is actually who I have my trade with, and I have it. This is my Cleveland pie in the sky trade. But Kevin Love and Jetty for Jimmy Butler. I know what you're gonna say. I know what you're gonna say. That's way too little for Jimmy Butler.
The Cavs don't have six first round picks to include in that trade.
They don't need it. Miami needs to move Butler now. Butler is 33 years old and has 4 more years left on this deal. Like, this deal is about to get real bad real fast. With the extension he just signed, next year it jumps to 45, the year after 48, and then 2025, 26, it is 52. Butler will be 36 years old, making $52 million. If Miami wants to compete during Bam's career, it's time to move Jimmy Butler. And I think he is, this is about to be the next albatross contract, because Jimmy is fine. Jimmy is okay. In our later segment, we'll get to it. Jimmy's still a top 20 all time, or top 20 current player, but he needs to be on a team that's going to maximize his chance to win right now. Otherwise, that $52 million in 3 years is just like the guillotine, just waiting to be dropped.
Man, blowing up Miami is not something that I thought I'd hear on this podcast today. But I do kind of get what you're saying with the sort of mismatch of timelines where, Bam is still in his prime and has multiple years of being in his prime, whereas Butler is sort of on his way out. But he is a guy that's like aging really well. And he's got this sort of game where it's based a lot on, strength and skill, more so than, he started out as a really athletic player, but at the moment he just kind of like bullies dudes and gets to where he needs to be. I think he will age reasonably well, but yeah, that contract could have a chance of being really bad. And if you've got that, you know, that much salary tied up in a guy who's not able to contribute to a championship caliber roster, then, you know, you pretty much do squander Bam's career.
And right now, if they were to do that, they would fall to being at the salary cap next year. And then in 2024-25, they would be like $30 million under the cap, giving them flexibility to go big. Mm. Big game hunting, trying to get a star. I mean, naturally, you'd like to try to get some picks, like to get something, but I just think the cap flexibility is going to play better for Miami than would other franchises. So I'd be a little bit less concerned about not getting a pick if you have more cap flexibility. It's worked. Miami collects stars. So it's a bit pie in the sky, I know, but it's the best I could come up with for a Cleveland dream scenario trade. Because, man, the Cleveland side, you would then have Garland and Mitchell to shoot and run the offense. You got Jimmy Butler to bully guys. You got one of the most impressive defensive of lines, and then you still have Caris LeVert off the bench. And maybe you have to include LeVert in this. Maybe that makes it a little bit more doable. But yeah, my dream is Butler in Cleveland.
All right, I'll give you one more Cleveland trade, just trying to get them a forward that can shoot and defend. Do you think Phoenix would do just LeVert for Jay Crowder?
I mean, Jay Crowder's not playing. LeVert, I know you are much lower on LeVert than I am.
Mm.
Phoenix, I would do that in a heartbeat. I mean, you can't pack Jay Crowder's bags. He's not talking to you. But I would drive to Cleveland and pick Caris LeVert up and drive him out to wherever you're playing. I think that would be a steal for them.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, Crowder's better as a four than a three. But, you know, Cleveland don't exactly have a great option at the three. I mean, Jay Crowder would be their best option.
Yeah. And bare minimum, he provides nice defense off the bench if you still want to go with Jetty or Okoro.
Yeah, and he's not efficient shooter, but he's like a willing shooter, and guys do guard him. And that's, you know, making shots is important, but just taking shots is also important for just the spacing of a team with two bigs and two slashers.
Did you hear on the low post, Zach Lowe throwing slander at Alex Caruso, calling him guard PJ Tucker?
Yes, I just listened to that yesterday, yeah.
It's hurtful. But it's kind of true. I went through and looked at those game logs.
Yeah.
Man is not putting up shots. And you just need to have a guy that's willing to shoot at times.
Yeah, yeah. He's liable to go for a 1-of-3 game.
Man.
1-of-3 and, you know, plus 20 in 18 minutes or something.
Hey, and that's the plus 20 in 18 minutes that loss. I care about. All right. Well, that brings the Brooklyn Nets, who have really climbed a lot lately. I forgot what they were since Kyrie returned, but it was like something like 11-2. Been on a tear. Not the toughest schedules. There haven't been a lot of marquee wins, but I remember before the season we were doing our wins projection, I was like, Brooklyn's still going to win 55 games because despite everything, they have the talent and they're continuing to prove that thought right. Was there any move that you liked for them?
For the Nets, they have a little bit of flexibility. They can move their 2023 first round pick. They've got a lot of sort of, you know, mid-range contracts, which are useful. The first one I came up with, just trying to get them a little more defense. Seth Curry, Joe Harris, Cam Thomas, and that 2023 first round pick to the Magic for Gary Harris and Markelle Fultz.
Mm.
You get Gary Harris, whose defense swung a series against the Clippers, who has been shooting reasonably well. He's a very up and down shooter, but you know, fits into that 3-and-D mold. And then Markelle Fultz, who's had his own issues. It's hilarious to get him on a team with Ben Simmons as part of this, but a guy who, even through all of his offensive struggles, has been a really good defensive guard. And, you know, his offense has gotten to the point where it's not, you know, he's not a liability offensively, and yeah, provides pretty good guard defense as well.
I like that. That makes sense. I'm not sure I want to give up Seth Curry, but, you know, I guess how much shooting from guards do you need when you already have Kyrie, you got Patty Mills out there, Joe Harris? Like, at some point you do probably need to move off of the duplicitous.
Yeah, and that was sort of my idea, is you move off of a couple of these one-way offensive players and get in some two-way guys.
Yeah, well, my move was a lot smaller.
Okay.
My move is a straight-up one-for-one. Kessler Edwards, who is the end of the Nets rotation, for Xavier Tillman, who has been in and out of the Grizzlies rotation.
Yeah.
And part of it's I really like what Xavier Tillman can do defensively. He's not a rim protector per se, but he can switch well on a guard, so he allows them to continue to do their switching defense.
Yeah, he was really good in the playoffs last year.
And he's a big body to set screens, and when you have all of those little guards, like, one of the problems with the Nets roster in my mind is you just switch everything. Who cares if Seth Curry sets a screen for Kyrie Irving? You just switch it. There's not like a type of player that you put on the one that you don't put on the other. And so when they go small, the opponent usually is forced to go small and just takes everything away. You get Xavier setting a screen, his body's going to take someone out. And, you know, hey, maybe you give him 10 minutes a night, but I think that 10 minutes a night will be impactful.
Yeah, I like it. I'll give you another one for Brooklyn. Slightly more higher caliber than Xavier Tillman.
There's higher caliber players?
Again, moving off of some shooting to get some two-way ability. Seth Curry, Joe Harris, and that 2023 first-round pick. In exchange for OG Anunoby and Kim Birch to fill salary. For the Raptors, they have really struggled in the half-court offense, really struggled with shooting. You get two really good shooters that can fit in around all of their long defensive guys. And the Nets obviously get an upgrade with OG, who's one of the best defenders in the league and has become a reasonably good offensive player. You don't think that's enough for Toronto?
I mean, I know when we were doing our top 100 over the summer, I had OG like 30 spots higher than you and Aaron and probably the rest of the world. But no, I mean, OG is a two-way guy that could be a 20 points per game scorer, can cut, can pass, can shoot a little. Like, those players don't grow on trees. I would not give him up for a Seth Curry and whatever else bag of bones you put in there. And I think Toronto has really enjoyed building their 6'9" lineup and wouldn't move off of that.
I'm guessing a 2027 Philadelphia pick isn't going to swing that.
Not really. I've been kind of just trying to figure out what's the value of these really far out picks. And sometimes they work. Like, I think that's how the Lakers got Magic, was off of a pick like 3 years prior. But it's just, I don't know. It's that pick has as good a chance as being really good as really bad when you start training something that far out. And, you know, I mean, Philly has their issues. Because Harden is definitely not going to age gracefully. And Joel Embiid could be injured any other season, but what if he gets injured next year and they get a really good player and then they have this two-star future? It just, you know, there's an equal chance of this being good as this being terrible. So,
I mean, with those far-out picks, I think they can definitely vary in value based on who the organization is. Like,
yeah,
if you were doing, you know, a Lakers or a Kings 2027 first-round pick, you know, that's a lot different to Raptors or a... even the Sixers, you know, a team that you have more faith in as an organization.
And I say all that, but my Sixers trade also hinges on that same sort of deal.
Yeah. All right, Sixers and Knicks, what do you got for the Sixers?
My 76ers trade, I have Tyrese Maxey, Tobias Harris,
Ooh.
And a 2029 first round pick.
All right.
For Bradley Beal.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, if Washington's got to move off of it, that's not, you know, terrible return. Tyrese Maxey's become a really awesome NBA player. And for the Sixers, you go to, I mean, that's a pretty ridiculous offensive lineup of Harden with Beal and PJ Tucker. And I guess Daniel House is the other starter. Get some three and D guys in there with Embiid.
Matisse Thybulle in there.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess if you're moving off Maxey, you don't need the spacing quite as much. Yeah. So, I mean, that's the sort of big swing that Philly could make. And the Tobias Harris contract is one that's interesting in that it does unlock a lot of players for you, but it is also so, you know, so far into the negative. I mean, it's probably, you know, $25 million in the red if we're talking about value compared to the contract.
It is and it isn't, because it's expiring after next season. So you don't have it that much more. Whereas like Beal's got four more years after this one.
Mm. Oh, it's worth mentioning also, Bradley Beal would have to be in on this because Washington gave him a no-trade clause.
I think Beal will say yes.
Yeah.
I can't imagine Beal saying that.
I hope so. I hope the Wizards wouldn't come to him and be like, hey, we've got a trade that's going to send you to the Sixers where you'll be a championship contender. And he's like, nah, I'm good. I don't want to be the third option.
It's just like, nah, me and KP and Kuzma, we got this.
Yeah. We're going to get the 10 seed. I promise you.
I mean, I think Maxey could be a nice building block for the 76ers in the future. I think the first round pick is a nice thing to have. Maybe you need two to make this happen. And then Tobias, yes, $37.6 million this season is not a pretty looking deal. But the next year, it's an expiring contract. You might be able to move that, take back a couple of bad contracts and more picks. You know, the classic, like, hey, we'll pay a pick to get off this contract pick type of deal. So I think it helps set the Wizards up for a future. It's kind of a shame that Tobias is now just a negative cap figure, because he used to be a pretty solid player, and he has those flashes. Like, I don't think there are 100 NBA players better than him.
Yeah. I mean, if you think back to that unexpected Clippers team that made the playoffs that year with Tobias Harris and Danilo Gallinari, like, how far off of that team would this theoretical Wizards team with Tobias Harris and Kyle Kuzma and Porzingis really be? Like, wouldn't they still just be a play-in caliber team?
Yeah. I mean, Washington could do this move and not fall in the standings.
Yeah, exactly, which is insane.
That might be reason not to do it, is actually that it doesn't actually hurt them. But, you know, Beal would be a really great scorer to get there. And I think having the three-prong stars in Philly is something that Daryl Morey would absolutely do. And I think it gives them their best chance of winning this season. And with Embiid's history and Harden's rapid decline, I think you got to try to go for something this year.
Yeah, I mean, we were just saying before we started on them that it's kind of hard to come up with a move for them that moves the needle given their limited resources and some negative salary and so on. Wouldn't you just be surprised if they don't make a move given who they have in the front office?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, hey, if you could do the same deal for Jimmy Butler under very similar like contexts of that deal is going to be an albatross because Butler is 3 years older and him and Embiid had a nice playing relationship. Like, I think Philly needs to go big star hunting and see what they can get.
Yeah. And if there's any general manager that's going to do it, it's Daryl.
Exactly. What'd you have for them?
I don't know, like a smaller move, maybe do like, I'm kind of done with Thibault. So maybe use his promise to just trade and get a guy that's kind of decent. Like, I don't know, I guess can I just trade Kimmich Williams to every good team in the league?
No, I was listening to a Thunder, her beat reporter, and they're like, yeah, this is the next Nick Collison. He's going to be a lifer. So oh, I don't man. Think you actually can trade him.
Yeah. I mean, he's like their only veteran player at this point. How about like,
he's the next Nick Collison.
Yeah. What about like Thibault and Korkmaz for Jay Crowder? Could we get a Jay Crowder, PJ Tucker front court going?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if you want to give up Korkmaz because he actually does some stuff. He creates off the bench. Yeah. Vision, you know, when Harden's out of the game, Maxey's out of the game.
I know. That's like, that's why the Suns are doing it, because they get a guy that can do some stuff.
I know. It's just worrisome. Well, I mean, you almost can because it's Phoenix and he's not playing. But it'd be worrisome from a Philadelphia perspective of how important Korkmaz actually is to them.
They, you know, the one thing that Doc does well though is to get lower level guys to reasonable level of play.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, like Shake Milton's had minutes, and you know, Georges Niang does his thing. D'Anthony Melton's
had
been
a
awesome
game against the Lakers the other day.
Yeah,
yeah. Where are the Melton stands? Because I remember being out on that deal.
Yeah,
and I was like,
oh, he's been so good. He's such a perfect player for them.
Is he? Is he really?
Yes.
I was going to say, don't feel like I've seen it. Do not feel like I've seen it when I've watched them play.
You know, he's averaging 12, 5, and 3 on efficient scoring and is one of the best defensive guards in the league. He's low-key like a really good fit next to Harden.
I'll watch him more closely next time.
We're talking bench guards, Nate. We're talking bench guards here. He's really good for a bench guard, okay?
Yeah, you know who's great for a guard? Danny Green, as soon as he gets healthy again. Just give him another 6 months.
He may be the difference maker for the Grizzlies in the playoffs.
He very well may be the Grizzlies trade chip on a $10 million expiring contract.
Yeah.
Well, with that brings us to the sixth best team in the East, which is the Knicks. What do you have for the Knicks?
And what the hell do you even do with the Knicks? What are they trying to achieve? Like, they've got this really weird dichotomy where they're theoretically trying to be good, but they're also not playing their veterans.
You want to know what my trade is for the Knicks?
Was it trading all their veterans?
It's Evan Fournier plus however many seconds the San Antonio needs to accept him straight up, not sending anything back. send back a copier.
Okay. Wait, we can't just get like Josh Richardson back?
Why?
Maybe like Evan Fournier and the Dallas first for Richardson?
Why?
Because he's a good player.
Yeah, but I'd rather just see them continue to give Grimes and Quickly minutes. Like, hey, you know, if you need to include Cam Reddish, just do Cam Reddish and Fournier into Spurs cap space. Just get off that deal. Do it.
Love it. I love that your big move for the Knicks is just getting rid of their players for nothing.
You got to find a way to get off of that $18 million. It's $18 million over the next, this year and two more.
Mm.
That's not great, especially if he's just completely out of your rotation. And he should be completely out of your rotation because you've actually done something impressive, which is draft well and have players worth developing.
Hmm.
Like, just get him out of there.
Would you, as the Lakers front office representative on this podcast, do Fournier and Randall for Westbrook straight up?
Not with Davis out for a month. Also, not with how well Westbrook's been playing lately. I mean, he's up and down, as we all know. But he's done a good job of trimming down the 6 seconds into the shot clock, so like 18 seconds left. Let me just jack a contested threes. Because like, he used to do that multiple times a game, and now he gets it once a game. And I'm fine. You can do it one time, Westbrook. I wouldn't do that. Also, just the cap implications of those guys for the next few years.
Yeah, that's the real downside, is that Randall's under contract for so long. But like, there are some useful players on this team. Like, Derrick Rose is basically out of the rotation. He's like a decent backup point guard. Like, can you think of anyone that just needs a backup point guard? Someone needs
Lakers.
A little scoring off the bench. Yeah.
Honestly, Milwaukee would be a good spot for Derrick Rose.
Yeah, I like that. It makes a reasonable amount of money, though, so it's hard.
Yeah, I'm also just not fully sold that he's a good backup point guard anymore. I mean, there's a reason he's out of the rotation. It's because he was averaging 6 points on below 40% shooting from the field.
Yeah, that is pretty rough.
It took him being really bad for Tibbs to bench him.
Yeah, hopefully this is just a slump and this isn't just the end of his career. Because like, he was legitimately a good player the last couple of years as just like a backup bench scorer.
I think this is the end. I mean, he's already been injured for quite a bit the last few years. I mean, 26 games last year, 50, 50, 51, which, you know, bubble years in there and shortened season years. So we're talking 50 as out of 72, or not 50 out of 82, but like, it's not a good sign. And decreasing points, decreasing in efficiency as his athleticism is leaving him. And he's 34. This is just kind of when you would expect a highly athletic guard who never fully developed a jump shot. His 3-point shot, it kind of waxes and wanes. He's had two good shooting seasons.
Mm.
But I think this is just the end of Rose.
Yeah. Are there any like sort of all in on making the playoff trades for the Knicks that you can think of? Like what would it take to get like DeMar DeRozan in here?
They're moves that I wouldn't want to do because they'd all be short-sighted and giving up the youth, the Grimes, the Quicklies.
Yeah. The Knicks have a lot of first-round picks from like Porzingis trades and stuff. Like 2023, they've got their own, they've got Washington, they've got Dallas, and they've got Detroit. And then 2025, they've got one from Milwaukee as well as their own. So like they've got like picks that they can move.
Yeah, the problem with both the Detroit and the Washington picks is they're like top 16 protected for the next like 4 years.
Hmm.
And so those are not likely to convey.
Yeah,
and,
I guess so.
You know, I mean, if they do convey, they're not going to be great picks. I mean, if you could package a bunch of picks together and bring in Bradley Beal, for instance.
Yeah.
That team makes the playoffs, but are they notably better than the Wizards have been the last couple of years? Not really.
Wizards 2.0?
Yeah. I mean, if your lineup is Brunson, Beal, RJ, Randall, and Mitchell Robertson, that still is a first-round exit.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't go all in. If anything, I'd be trying to figure out a way out, and that might be more, hey, do you have to package a first to get off Randall? Could you send Randall for Tobias Harris to cut down the number of years on the deal?
Mm, yeah, that is one that I considered. And also that trade probably, like all jokes aside, makes the Knicks a better team. Like they'd probably win more games with Tobias Harris as their four than Julius Randall.
Yeah, if for no other reason than it gets the ball out of Randall's hands and puts it in Brunson and Quickly.
Gives you more floor spacing and a better shooter.
Yeah. Yeah. Are we ready for the Heat?
are these all blowing it up, trading away Jimmy Butler trades?
No, my Heat dream trade is basically the same as my Cavs dream trade, but instead of giving out Butler, It's giving up Duncan Robinson. It's Oladipo and Robinson for Kevin Love. And, you know, same sort of deal. You're moving off a lot of salaries for short-term salaries. Yeah. I also like how Love would fit in Miami as just, he's become a competent defender. I mean, he's really good at taking charges, sliding his feet, and he can space, which is something Miami desperately needs.
They are really struggling for minutes at the four. Like, unless Jimmy's just going to be their four. Yeah, Caleb Martin's actually been kind of decent, but this is a team that's sort of lacking in forward depth. You know, they've got sort of a lot of playable guards and not a lot of forwards.
Threes.
Yeah. I almost think that Cleveland wouldn't necessarily want to do that. I mean, Kevin Love has, like, been really pretty solid. You know, he's basically almost back to, I mean, like, he's still overpaid, but it's not really that ridiculous at the moment. Like, he's like a legit six man at the moment. What's a legit six man worth, like, 18 million? You know, like, he's
like 12. 12, but you hope you get him for 5.
Yeah. Interesting thing with the Heat is if they decide to go the opposite direction and go all in, they've got a couple first round picks they can trade. Like, I don't know how valuable, like, a 2025 and 2027 first round pick with, you know, Duncan Robinson and Victor Oladipo is. Like, is that getting you another star? Probably not. You know, that's sort of one of those organizations that I was talking about where, because of their historical competence, you would value their future first at a lower rate than you would some other team. They've got some holes, but all of their tradable salary is, like, negative value.
Yeah, which, you know, for Cleveland, getting back Duncan Robinson is a really nice shooter and floor spacer, in theory. Just 2 years ago, we were talking about him in the top 100. I forget where he landed. It was somewhere between 80 and 100. So not, like, super great, but he was one of the best catch-and-shoot players. And with the two bigs around them, he could just be floor spacing. He doesn't need to do anything more. And Victor Oladipo, yeah, he's never getting back to what we saw in Indiana, but he still has flashes and moments and can provide some defense. So it's kind of a nice flyer on him. And you're maintaining the salary cap spots, whereas if you just don't move Love, you never have those cap spots again.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. It is important for these over-the-cap teams that do have sort of short-term aspirations to maintain those types of salary slots. You know, it's really hard to add players and to add salary when you're over the cap, you know, sort of almost a tax team like Cleveland is. I kind of wonder, though, somewhat off topic, whether, like, Cleveland would be a tax team, because, like, Dan Gilbert is one of those guys that just, like, really made a lot of money off of COVID. Or I think he's, like, maybe even top two, like, maybe second richest owner in the league, or, like, right up there. Hey, but yeah, well, I wonder whether Cleveland could use his enormous wealth finally to improve the team. Third richest owner in the league. Robert Pera of the Memphis Grizzlies.
Oh, yeah. That guy, like, invented the internet.
Yep. There's a real sleeper organization. They're actually really cheap now, so, like, they're just sort of, you know, banking money.
I was trying to figure out a way to trade them LeBron.
Yeah.
It's like, can we get Desmond Bain for LeBron? What do we have to do? And they just don't have salaries to, like, add up to LeBron's. I was like, damn it.
Yeah.
Well, what did you have for Miami?
How can we get them Jay Crowder back?
He's very cheap right now. He's not playing basketball.
I mean, that's by choice, though. I think that you are undervaluing Jay Crowder. Like, a playoff team would trade, like, a first-round pick for him, despite the fact that he's not playing. Miami don't really have anything to give up, though, is the issue.
Conference team just has to give up a second to get him, which the Heat have actually traded away almost all of their seconds. I don't know if you looked at their pick assets, but they only have 9 picks over the next several years that they can trade. And they're almost all first-round picks. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they trade away all of their seconds. It's quite remarkable.
And you know why, right?
Because they were just like, fuck, second-round picks. No one good ever comes from them.
It's because the Suns literally do not care about the draft. Like, they do not put any money or any effort or any, like, scouting into the draft. And so, like, they're trading away their second-round picks because, like, they don't even know, like, any of the second-round guys because they don't care about the draft and they don't scout guys.
We're talking about the Heat not having any second-round picks. Do the Suns also not have any second-round picks? Yeah.
Maybe.
No. The Suns still have second-round picks.
Okay.
All right.
Well,
yeah.
The Heat should have second-round picks. Those would be useful. They're good at talent identification. They're the opposite of the Suns.
They do a really good job of picking them up in the G League and finding these guys.
Mm.
But, yeah, they do not have a second-round pick until 2028. So they've traded away 23, 24, 25, 26, and 27.
Yeah. And then, like I said, they've got 25 and 27 first round picks that they can trade. But, you know, do you want to do that in this year when you're not a contender to add a role player? No. You'd have to think that they're, you know, just going to bank those for when they need them.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't think you give up a first for Crowder. You know, maybe a Western Conference team has to give up a first. Yeah, you know, I was watching the Suns play the Pelicans twice in the last week, and I was like, man, Crowder could be really nice on the Pelicans because they could really use that like consistent defensive stopper. You know, Najee Marshall and Trey Murphy are great, but not there yet. And I was like, there's no way Phoenix is trading. No way Phoenix is doing the Pelicans a solid. Yeah. That's just not happening.
Yeah, if Griff calls up, like the Suns are just hanging up the phone no matter what.
Yeah, just click.
Yeah, yeah. James Jones is not talking to David Griffin. He's like, get the fuck out of here, though.
All right, any other trades for the Heat?
No, like what the hell can they even do? Maybe they go the opposite way and just take on more bad money. Like a subtle tank.
Westbrook, I like it.
Do we have another Tobias Harris destination?
Well, they could be a sneaky Tobias Harris destination. All right, then that takes us to the Pacers.
Pacers are really hard to come up with trades, not because they don't have tradable players, but just because you don't really know what they're trying to achieve. And if you were to trade a player, like, what are you trying to get out of it? And so this is theoretically one of the teams that should be sellers, but, you know, it would not surprise me at this stage if they do close to nothing.
Yeah, I can definitely see them doing close to nothing. However, my trade for them, the trade I'm submitting officially on this podcast, is Daniel Theis, Goga Bitadze, and 1-3 first round picks because they have Cleveland's and Boston's this year, which won't be good picks, for Kyle Kuzma.
Yep. All right. I like it.
That's all I get. That's all I get. Yeah, all right, I like it.
No, Kyle Kuzma's actually been like really solid this year and would definitely fit into like what the Pacers are trying to do, if what they're trying to do is be a playoff team. And so it's really interesting that this team that coming into the year we ranked as one of the worst teams in the league, because we thought they'd be trading away all their players and selling everything off. It's really interesting then that the sort of trade idea now that you've come up with is them actually as a buyer. Like, who would have thought that coming into this year that they would be buying, you know, trading four veteran players?
Who would have thought coming into this year that Tyrese Haliburton would make a leap and be an all-star? I mean, that I'm not even saying all-star candidate. He's an all-star. And you've got some really nice pieces around him. I didn't think Benedict Mathurin would be as good as he is. He is probably, well, he's not going to be Rookie of the Year because Paolo Banchero exists, but he's the second best rookie this season. Yeah. He's also going to win Sixth Man of the Year.
Exactly,
just because they won't start
him. Like, has a player ever won Rookie of the Year and Sixth Man of the Year?
I don't know. Probably not, but that would be a good thing to aim for.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, Jalen Smith has looked good. He's had some really nice moments. Miles Turner. How old do you think Miles Turner is?
26.
Exactly, 26 years old. Why not be buyers? Your whole rotation is 20 to 26, aside from Buddy Hield. Go for it.
I mean, like, their own competence has made it really hard for them to, you know, really come up with a good sort of identity of you know, a good sort of long-term plan of what they're trying to do. Because they've got, like, these really good players and, like, a good coach. But then, like, they've got their own picks, and the good players that they have aren't good enough to develop into a championship team. So it's like, how the hell are they going to do this long term? You know, like, if they're just a playoff team for the rest of Halliburton's career, they're never going to be able to pair him with another really good player. Like, Indiana's not getting a fucking superstar free agent.
They're not. But if they can keep all of these guys on not bloated deals, he was looking at, hey, could Memphis theoretically win the championship this year? Well, I think there's a good chance they make the Western Conference Finals. And if they make Western Conference Finals, there's a good chance they make the Finals. And the Finals, anything can happen.
Yeah.
You know, what's the window for the Bucks? Middleton and Drew Holiday are getting old. Milwaukee doesn't really have a great way to replace them. Yes, Boston is going to be the juggernaut for a little bit. You know, Tatum, God, I can't believe he's still only 19. But if you get an injury to one of the other core Celtics, they're beatable because they're very top heavy. Whereas I think the Pacers could build out a pretty nice rotation. And I think that might be something we see in the next decade, is these teams of guys that are outbeating stars. And maybe that makes them into stars, but I wouldn't rule the Pacers' internal development out from being title contenders. as weird as that is to say.
Interesting. I do think that you're sort of right about this trend that we may see coming up, where you sort of build the best team that you possibly can, and even if you're not one of the, you know, top two teams in your conference by like title odds, just by hanging around there, like something always happens, something always comes up, and someone always drops out. And so, like, for a market like Indiana, where playoffs is actually really useful, where they really kind of do need a good team, you know, from a financial perspective, that sort of could be one of the markets where just building a team around, you know, a whole bunch of just solid players, Haliburton as your one star, and, you know, being a four seed every year and waiting for the right breaks. That's sort of one of the few markets where that sort of thing could, you know, be legitimate.
I also think we might be heading towards like a 90s era where teams only have the one superstar, and then other teams, like 90s run TMC Warriors, Mitch Hardaway and Mullen, you know, they're not in the same stratosphere as Jordan, Barkley, but like they have regular, you know, there's an equilibrium between those types of teams. And I think Indiana might be more on the run TMC side than the we have a Jordan.
Yeah. Speaking of our love for OG Anunoby. What do you think has to be included to get him on this team? And would it be a Miles Turner for OG? Would that be a trade that makes sense?
I don't know that Indiana gives up Turner for OG. Yeah.
It's difficult with Turner because it's pretty much you just got to like have a conversation with the dude and be like, hey, are you going to re-sign? And if he's like, yeah, then it's like, okay, sweet, you don't trade him. But if he's like, I don't know, we'll see how it goes, then like you have to move off of him. You know, so like he does actually hold quite a lot of power at the moment. But from everything that we've seen throughout his career, it seems like he's a guy that's sort of content to stick with what he's got.
Yeah, he really wanted to be in Indiana because he wanted to have that bigger role. Like he was semi-excited when they moved off of Sabonis.
Yeah.
So it doesn't seem like he's got like hard feelings towards the organization. But, I mean, you could do the same Kuzma package for OG, you know, if Toronto wants to kind of do like a quick rebuild or get some more assets to maybe throw for a bigger trade. Because like Toronto could repackage these picks and go for...
Yeah.
You know, Jimmy Butler or something.
A repeat of the Kawhi Leonard trade.
You've
got a really solid core, but you're missing that one superstar player. So if you can get some assets together, throw it that way, bring in a superstar to your really solid core of really good complementary players, then yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's the top eight in the East. We still have seven more to go. So let's try to burn through who these next... seven, although I should say that I do not have trades for a good number of them. Yeah. So,
do you want to just do the top 10?
Top 10 and one more. There's one other trade that I'd like.
Yeah, we've probably got to do top 12, right? Like Orlando, Detroit, Charlotte, that's not that interesting, but we should probably do the top 12.
All right. So the ninth seed is the Atlanta Hawks, and I have them trading John Collins to the Pistons for Bojan Bogdanović, finally uniting the Bogdanoviches.
Yes.
And Killian Hayes. And I did this like 2 weeks ago, and Hayes was kind of my throw-in. I don't think you can get Killian Hayes now. My guy has rebounded. His value, his stock is too high. But Bojan plus maybe another piece. What do you think?
Yeah, I like it. I mean, that's sort of the perfect fit for what they need. I mean, in theory, you'd like to get more value for John Collins. In reality, like, who's lining up to trade for this guy? You know, he's a pretty terrible fit with what they're trying to do, whereas Bogdanović is a guy that can floor space. For the season, I predicted that the Hawks would have a really good offense. I predicted them possibly as the number one offense in the league, and they haven't been. And the reason for that is I didn't think about the fact that they traded away all their three-point shooters. And so you get Bogdanović back in as a guy who can shoot, can hold up defensively, can do some ball handling. Like, running a handoff with Trae Young would be a really solid play. Maybe even get like Bogdanović in like a Spain pick and roll action would be pretty nice, you know, cause real confusion with Trae as the ball handler. So yeah, I think that's a good move and the kind of move that they should be doing.
Well, and one of the things is when they brought in Murray is they added another non-shooter to the floor, which DeAndre Hunter is not really a great shooter. Collins is a streaky shooter. Capella is a non-shooter. So you're looking at like one good shooter in the rotation. Now with Bogdan, and you've got kind of two, but But if you have a Bogdan, Bojan, Clint Capella front court with Trey and Murray in the backcourt, now you've got three good shooters, two good defenders. Like, you've got some room to make stuff happen.
Yeah.
And for the Pistons, John Collins actually fits really nicely into what they've kind of accumulated talent-wise. He's about on the same age trajectory. You know, I think it's better than just getting, you know, the undisclosed pick that's going to be somewhere in the mid-teens to 20s. Like, that's got to be better than that, right?
Yeah. I mean, in a similar vein to that as well, Kyle Kuzma and whatever else you have to do to fill out salary, like, I think that's a pretty reasonable deal for the Wizards. You get a guy with potentially higher upside who's a little younger, and the Hawks get a guy that's ready to contribute right now.
Yeah.
Just to, for sake of completeness, to get him in as a trade candidate for every team, you could do something with Jay Crowder to Phoenix. And with the idea being that Phoenix just adds some, you know, some athleticism from the forward spot.
Yeah. I don't know who you send out, though, before Atlanta. Oh, they had Cutler. Jared Cutler was playing in for them, and he looked nice. It was kind of nice to see him out there on a NBA court once again.
Jared Culver?
Culver, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, he's always sort of been like a pretty good defender. He just can't fucking make a shot.
Yeah.
Same as his former teammate and current Phoenix Suns.
Okogie?
Yeah, Josh Okogie, yeah.
Yeah. No, Josh Okogie closed the Pelicans game. He was a little bit surprised.
Yeah. Did you see the Jose Alvarado mic'd up from that game?
No, what did he say?
He's like, yo, they got Okogie guarding Zion, give him the ball every single time. Like, keep getting the ball, they got Okogie on him.
Oh god, no, I watched the like 40-minute condensed version. They cut out the mic'd up.
Yeah.
But I did see Okogie get in, like, I think it was the end of the first or in the second, but it was a really bad bench lineup and no one was moving. And so he's like, I'm going to create for myself. Did not end well. But the rest of the game, good defense. He got some really big offensive rebounds or tip outs. Yeah. Like 4 minutes left. So good to see Okogie out there.
Similar to Culver, like a guy that does everything else except freaking shoot.
So maybe you trade Crowder for Culver. You'd probably need more than that, but you know, the makings of a deal. Was that what you had for Atlanta, or do you have something more?
I've got one spicy concept, I guess.
Ooh.
Trae Young is a fucking dickhead and like keeps beefing with every coach. What can you get if you just decide to move Trae Young and build around DeJounte and whatever else?
Interesting.
Like, could we get Jalen Brunson and every single first round pick from the Knicks? Get the king of the garden to the garden?
I like that one. I've heard that one. I've heard that floated of, can we get Trae Young to the garden? I'm trying to think where else he might fit.
Do you think you could get OG and Van Vliet for Trae Young and Collins?
Fair value, but I don't think either team does it. I don't think Collins wants to go to Toronto either. Just him and Siakam.
Like, he's got a four-year contract making over $20 million a year. What does he get to say?
You don't want to give up that much assets for a guy that doesn't want to come there.
I actually think that Collins and Siakam are a perfect fit. Or rather, Siakam's the perfect fit with Collins because, like, he has to play the four on offense, which is good because it lets Siakam be the five on offense, which creates mismatches. But then Collins has to play the five on center because he doesn't have the quickness to defend on the perimeter, which Siakam does. But then you also have, like, complementary rim protection from Siakam as a help defender, from Scottie Tolles' degree.
Yeah, I'm just... That's not going to happen. Too much. Too much. Too many high-value pieces. I don't know where you could realistically send Trey. I'm not entirely opposed to the idea of moving off of him. I don't think you do it just yet. I don't think you move a player of his caliber at this age, unless you want to end up on the what could have been list. You know, I was watching one of Aaron's TikToks and he's doing like 30 best teams to have never won a ring, or like, you know, kind of like the Steve Nash Suns as an era.
Yeah.
And he did like the mid 90s Wizards. He's like, this team never won shit, but they had Ben Wallace, Rasheed Wallace, Juwan Howard, Rip Hamilton. I forget who all, he like just kept naming players that they had and they got rid of. That would all be all multi all-time all-stars. And actually a lot of them teamed up with the Pistons, but I don't think you move off Trae Young for another couple of years, no matter how much of a dick he might be.
Yeah.
But I like the spice. Is that one of your Raptors dream trades? Because Raptors are 10th.
All the Raptors, they actually have like a pretty solid squad. They're good at defense. They've got a whole bunch of really good complementary players, but their half-court offense is absolutely abysmal. The worst half-court offense, except for the Houston Rockets, who, you know, don't have a point guard and play through a 19-year-old. And so, like, who is just an offensive creator that they can bring in, even if it does mean moving off of OG or moving off of even Freddie? Like, is there a better offensive point guard that they can bring in for Van Vliet, just based on the idea that they've got all the guys around, you know, all the other guys in the other four spots to complement a guy who's maybe a little bit weaker defensively, but can provide half-court offense?
You have someone in mind?
other than Trae Young, it's pretty difficult.
Other than the greatest offensive juggernaut there is?
I mean, like, I don't know that, like, Zach LaVine does much for you.
Just can't imagine what you'd have to give up to get Zach. Like, I feel like the value he has to Chicago is going to way exceed the value he has to your franchise to try to bring him in.
Yeah, it is tricky. Like, the lack of sellers is difficult. You know, in an ideal world, Portland would continue to fall and you could, like, I don't know, do something with Dame, but I'm sure there'll be a lot of contenders for that.
Yeah.
I kind of just wish that they made the Kevin Durant trade.
Yeah, that would have been good. Although I don't know how seriously Brooklyn was really taking those offers, because, like, we were on it over the summer saying, hey, they should just hold out. Like, what is he going to do? He's not going to sit out and not play basketball.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, they would have done it for Scotty, but the Raptors wouldn't put Scotty in.
You know, they say they would have done for Scotty. I don't actually entirely know that you would have, and I don't know that the Raptors wouldn't have put Scotty in. Like, I mean, maybe that's all true, but I personally believe that it wasn't close. I don't have anything good for the Raptors. My best Raptors idea is the fact that they have a 5.5 cap exception and could pair that with, like, a top 20 protected pick. Mm-hmm. And try to pick off someone from either the Raptors, the Heat, or the Wizards. Looking at, like, an under $5 million salary, we've got Denny Avdia, we have Korkmaz, and we have George Niang.
Nick Collison 2.0.
Yeah. Well, like, the basic premise is those three teams are all sitting about $2 to $3 million over the luxury tax. Mm. And this would drop them below it, get them to avoid repeater taxes. And yeah. Hey, if you can pick up something for nothing when you're there, I mean, might as well. Now, the Raptors on the flip side are like 2.2 below the tax, so maybe they don't want to jump up for no good reason.
That's what I was going to say, is like, what's their tax situation?
Yeah, but, you know, if they could get someone for nothing, I don't know if they've got any non-guaranteeds or some wiggle room, but just that 5.5 is a very, very usable trade exception.
Mm. I mean, they've got Otto Porter at $6 million with a player option next year.
Yeah, he feels movable. Really, actually, every time I watch them play, Thad Young just does all of the right little things that I could see him being a sixth man or a starter, depending on if you have a good four or not, on, like, every contending team.
Yeah, I've really been a fan of Thad Young in recent years. I think he's kind of fallen out of it a little bit recently, but, like, there was that one season with Chicago where he, like, was, I mean, I probably should have been, like, sixth man of the year for them.
Well, I was trying to find what the defensive metrics were, because he had some just wild, like, help defense stat or at rim protection. I could not track it down, but those Chicago's in his last couple of years in Indiana were really great. Yeah, he did nothing for San Antonio. Big, big whoop. But I'd love to see him get to a contender at the deadline. Well, that is the top 10 in the East. I don't have any trades for Chicago, which is odd, because they are probably the team that is the most desperate need for a trade. What do you have for them?
Yeah. I mean, maybe if we don't talk specifics on them, but just conceptually, what do you think they are likely to do, and what do you think they should do? Because this is a team that has really, really disappointed this year based on, I guess, previous year's win record. And could this be a blow-it-up candidate? Could we see them become sellers? Like, you know, you get a first round pick for Caruso and see what you can get for Vooch and maybe even DeMar. You know, there are quite a few, like, good role players that you can maybe get some return for. Is this a team that could quietly become a seller? Or on the flip side, a team that's trying to win now, is there anything that they could really do to improve?
As far as improving goes, Patrick Williams has been fine. Not going to trash him. He's coming back from an injury from last year. He's not hit the level of expectations that everyone placed on him over the offseason. But I think there would be teams that would be willing to buy into Patrick Williams.
Oh, yeah. He'd still have a lot of value.
I just don't know. There aren't teams trying to sell quality players for young guys right now.
Hmm.
Like, who's actively trying to get Patrick Williams, and what's the best player on that team? You know, maybe Indiana wants him. Could you get... Do you want anyone from Indiana? Does yeah. Indiana want to give up any... I don't think you're going to get Miles Turner for him. You also have to add in more salaries, and I don't...
Yeah, probably has to be Vooch.
Yeah, it's weird to make a deal with Chicago. I honestly just kind of think they roll it all back and over into next season.
Because
blowing it up next season or blowing it up next offseason is much more doable. Their pick is already gone this year. It's top four protected. So even if they had the best lottery odds, they have about a 50% chance of keeping it. If they... don't have the best lottery odds, it's not a good chance of keeping it. So in my mind, I say just stick it out, maybe make a small move around the edges, see if anybody wants Coby White, maybe someone wants Caruso.
Yeah, but, I mean, if you can get a first round pick for Caruso, are you making that move?
Oh, if I can get a first round pick for Caruso, absolutely. If I can get a good second for Caruso, probably.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
Have I thoroughly surpassed you in Alex Caruso value of evaluation?
No, I love Caruso. I just, I don't know that he's a starter, or like, I don't know if he's guy five or guy four through seven on a title team.
Can't be a starter, yeah.
And like, that's what I'm looking for if I'm giving up that pick.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. It is tough to move first round pick for a guy that can't start.
Yeah. I mean, maybe Phoenix flips your Jay Crowder for Caruso, because they could use some more guard defense if Chris Paul's aged as much as he seems to have aged. But
yeah
that's kind of where I'd be at, is I wouldn't make that move.
If you were to make a prediction, do you think that they're more likely to buy, sell, or to do nothing and roll it over?
Do nothing and roll it over. What about you?
I think they could be sellers. I mean, if you sort of take it from like a economic perspective, where like supply of good players is really, really low, it does mean that you can get a better price for those good players. So maybe you take advantage of that sort of market inefficiency, and, you know, where there are so few sellers that you jump in and you can get better value. I don't know.
It's possible. But I think one of the other things is that you also don't have a lot of buyers. Like,
yeah,
you know, I don't see any teams that are really wanting to disrupt their future to try to get player X or Y. I mean, maybe Denver feels like this is their year, and they're just like, hey, we're going to roll the dice that Michael Porter Jr. never becomes anything, and we offer MPJ for DeMar DeRozan. I don't love or hate that trade. Like, it's a huge gamble for both sides, but that could be a theoretical deal.
Yeah. What's your level of interest in DeMar from a Lakers perspective? Like, what's the most that you'd give up for him? Would you do Westbrook and one pick for DeMar?
No.
Hmm.
The problem is that Westbrook's ball handling and passing with the reserves has become so important.
Yeah.
That, you know, if we're getting DeMar, it's because I think that we're going to be a title contender. And I think losing Westbrook pushes them back far enough that DeMar's impact, even before Davis went down, and especially now with Davis out, I don't think that this is doable. The Lakers can move Beverly Walker and another small salary and get to that threshold to trade for DeRozan.
Yeah, Kendrick Nunn.
Yeah, yeah. Westbrook, Beverly, and you actually don't even have to go Nunn. You can go Damon Jones, but let's just do Nunn. That deal plus picks, that deal, that could be enough, because you can sign guys. But I don't know if that's what Chicago wants, is two future Lakers picks or for DeMar.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough because they're not going anywhere with what they've got. And
yeah.
So you can either stick to it and not go anywhere, or you can move off of DeMar, move off of Vooch, take a step back for a couple of years in the hopes that you can put something better around Zach LaVine.
I think that's just the problem.
Maybe you cash out on LaVine and you get, you know, the biggest haul that you can. You say, okay, we're not going anywhere. We are limited in ways that we can improve. We can't really add additional players. This hasn't worked. What can we get for LaVine that we can rebuild to eventually become a championship team?
Yeah, I that's what I would ultimately do, is I don't think LaVine is the guy that you can build around, because they did the Giannis model without Giannis. They're like, hey, let's get two other low-grade all-stars and our superstar can get us there. And it's like, oh no, LaVine is another low-grade all-star that needs to be around a superstar.
Yeah.
Hey, maybe Philly can come in with the Tobias Harris and future picks. Get future Lakers picks, future or 76ers picks, move off DeMar, move off LaVine, just drive this tank right into the ground, and then...
Give Patrick Williams all he can eat.
Ooh, it's a dark, dark timeline. But they're actually not that far off from having the worst record. They're at 11 wins right now. The Hornets are at 7. So you move off LaVine and DeRozan for future picks. You could tank real hard.
Yeah, you could get into the top 5. Outside of like the top 2 guys, is this draft supposed to be good? Like if you're like picking at like 5 or 6, is it supposed to be? Have you had a chance to look into it much yet?
I haven't looked too much into it, but the name that keeps coming up is Amen Thompson. And it is like locked into everyone's boards at number 3. So I do think it is kind of a striation of 1, 2, 3, and then the cluster. But
right.
But I mean, they're only going to have the pick if it's 1, 2, 3, or 4. So I would not bottom out to try to get this year's pick entirely. It's a chance. It's a gamble. Well, is there anyone in the bottom 4 teams that you wanted... that you had a mock trade, because I wanted to do my Pistons mock trade and then I forgot that my Pistons mock trade was also my Hawks mock trade.
It's a little bit tricky. I mean, the Magic have some veterans that they could try to move off of, like a fault steal. Mo Bamba's doing nothing on this team. Could they just like trade him for anything for both of their sake? For the Pistons, you hope that they'll move off of Bogdanovich. They did give him an extension, but he is still trade eligible. You know, they've got Alec Burks and Nerlens Noel who could help a good team. Ideally, they would move some of those guys and get any assets that they can, because the Pistons are not close to being a good team like they thought that they were when they brought in those 3 veterans. And then for the Hornets, the big guy for them is Kelly Oubre. Like, what could you get from Kelly Oubre? He's on an expiring contract. He can shoot a little. He's athletic. You know, a fairly low IQ player, so that limits him a little bit. But, you know, could you get like 2 decent seconds for Kelly Oubre or something? Maybe take back some bad money and get a first. I just hope that they do sell. I hope that those guys are moved for something. I don't want to, you know, get past the trade deadline and then, you know, the Hornets are still playing Rozier and Haywood and Oubre, and the Pistons have still got Bogdanovich and Noel and Burks. And
yeah. I mean, Mason Plumlee, he would be a nice his backup for a lot of teams. Could you get him to Brooklyn?
Or Denver? Denver are the worst team in existence whenever Jokic sits. Could you get a return of Plumlee to Denver?
Well, that'd be fantastic.
Yeah. Let you play kind of similarly, because he is an above average passer for the 5. You know, you don't have to sort of try to, you know, sort of recreate or you know, start from scratch in terms of offensive system. Whenever you go to the bench, you can play a similar way with Plumlee as your, you know, dollar store Jokic.
Yeah. He's at 9 mil a year. It's hard for Denver to get up there, but I guess they've got Jeff Green at 4.5 and Ish Smith at 4.7.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That gets you 9.
Yeah.
I don't know that excites the Hornets any. Maybe if you figure out a way to work Najee Marshall in there. Oh, hey, Green and Marshall, yeah, make it work.
Yeah, there we go.
Sorry, not Najee Marshall. Zeke Najee.
Yeah. I used to do that too every time I watch a Pelicans game. I'd be like, oh, there's Zeke Najee. It's like, no, that's Najee Marshall.
When I'm done editing this will be at like an hour and 15 minutes, but we're 2 hours into our conversation and the Najee Marshall, Zeke Najee mix up is just going to happen at that point.
Yeah.
I think that about wraps up the trade news for the Eastern Conference. We'll come back and do some Western Conference. Also talk more about what's going on in the league now that the Western Conference is falling apart and my Lakers are no longer going to have Anthony Davis for a month. Dylan, where can the people find you?
Subscribing to Possible Cheers on YouTube.
Go like, subscribe there. Like and subscribe here. Shoot us a message, hoopstemple@gmail.com. Love to hear from you. Thanks.